Dear listeners, Sai Ram, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. So we are in chapter 11 of Sandeha Nivarini. And Sandeha Nivarini is that treatise Bhagwan has given us wherein he as a devotee has posed the questions and then he as the divine preceptor, divine master has answered those questions. And over so many weeks, as we contemplate on what Bhagwan has written, there are concepts which are deep. There are concepts which need a lot of reflection. But at the end of it, all of these are the fundamental blocks of spiritual understanding. As I have mentioned before, Bhagwan started writing the Vahinis with the start of the Upadesha phase of his life. The first 16 years of his life, as he has mentioned, is about Leelas, the next 16 years about Mahimas. And the 32nd year starts the phase of message, Upadesha, and the Sanatana Sarathi began in the 32nd year in 1958, and the Vahinis were the main subject of the Sanatana Sarathi. In fact, Sanatana Sarathi was the carrier of Bhagwan's Vahinis. It started with Prema Vahini, and even as Bhagwan was writing Prema Vahini, simultaneously he started writing Sandeha Nivarini. So, in this chapter 11, in the first segment, Bhagwan says that everyone truly is asti bhati priyam, which means sat chit ananda. Asti means that which is, bhati means that which shines, and priyam means that which is pleasing. Everything in the creation, everything around us, is asti bhati priyam. It exists, it shines, and it is pleasing. But for one to realize this, Swami says there are some obstructions. There are past obstructions, there are present obstructions, there are future obstructions. The past obstructions are bhuta pratibandhas. Are something, Swami says, you can remove if you go beyond the name and form. Tommy gives the example of you loving a dog. If you dearly love a dog, that dog too, Swami says, is Brahman. The dog has a name and fame. If you remove both your name and form and remove the name and form of the dog, then what remains is only Brahman. So getting rid of name and form is Brahman. And in all the multifold names and forms, there is inherent just one Brahman. Swami says that is asti. And someone has to be there to recognize this. That intelligence which recognizes this is bhati. There is a yearning to see it, to experience it, to seek for it. That is priyam. So Bhagavan, through various examples, has explained this concept of asti, bhati, priyam. Everything in this cosmos is filled with love. We may not be able to recognize it because of our limited perception. So everything is priyam. There is an intelligence which recognizes that is bhati, and that thing exists, that is asti. Sat, chit, ananda, asti, bhati, priyam. In fact, we have discussed this in detail in one of the previous sessions. And in the next segment, segment 11.2, Bhagavan goes on to explain the obstructions of the present. What are the reasons why we are not able to experience everything around us being asti, bhati, priyam, sat, chit, ananda? And Swami says there are four obstructions in the present. And the first is attachment to sense objects. How it is so important to control one's tendencies and inclinations driven by the senses. The previous session, we discussed this in a little detail. The second obstruction, Bhagavan says, is cynical criticism. People don't understand the teachings of the master and they discover wrong meanings and criticize the master because of their narrow-minded thinking. And then the third obstruction, Swami says, is dullness of understanding, wherein you don't understand what the master says. You are confused because you are not intelligent enough to grasp the things that are explained by the master. And the fourth, Swami says, is absurd conceit. This is the last obstruction where one person feels that I am a great scholar, I am a pandit, I am an ascetic. And that whole feeling of I happens because you mistake the body and the senses for the Atma. Because of that, there is this absurd conceit, and this becomes another major obstacle. Obstructions of the present. So let's listen once again to what Bhagavan has given us in this segment 11.2, and we will move on to the second obstruction of the present. In the previous session, we talked about attachment to sense objects. The second, Swami says, is cynical criticism. We'll spend some time on this, but first, let's once again listen to what Bhagavan has given us in this second segment of chapter 11.
Now I know what is meant by the obstruction of the past. What are the obstructions of the present?
Good, I shall tell you. The obstructions of the present are of four types: attachment to sense objects, cynical criticism, dullness of understanding, and absurd conceit. The first is the case of attachment to objects that attract the senses. The second makes men discover wrong meanings in the teachings of the Guru. The third causes confusion because things explained by the Guru are not grasped at all. The last obstruction makes one feel that one is a great scholar, pundit, or ascetic, mistaking the body and the senses for the Atma.
And what are the obstructions of the future?
Oh, they come always through sinful deeds. They come and obstruct unawares.
How are we to meet them, Swami?
It is not possible for all. The sincere aspirant can to some extent know of the approaching sinful deeds with certainty, which could be in the nature of compassion leading to attachment. This should be recognized as an obstruction of the future. It is difficult to be forewarned like this as the result of the effort of one single life. It may take many lives to acquire this education.
Are there any who have so learnt it?
Why, there are. The scriptures speak of Bharata and Vasudeva. Bharata required 2 or 3 births. Vasudeva had to be born once.
That means these 3 obstructions cannot be known unless one takes many lives. Can we not succeed without all that bother?
Why? The aspirant can, by reasoning out the nature of these 3, escape from being affected by them. Otherwise, undoubtedly, it may take many lives.
So that is what Bhagwan has given us in this segment. So going back to what I was saying, Bhagwan mentions about 4 obstructions in the present, and the first is attachment to sense objects, and the second is cynical criticism. Why do people criticize? Why is it that people take their time out only to look at the faults of others? Why is it that people constantly, instead of looking at themselves, are looking at others and judging them? Why is it that people continuously try to demean the activities or the successes or the nature of the work done by someone else? In the book Satyopanishad, wherein Professor Anil Kumar has documented the questions that he had put to Bhagwan, in one of them, he once had asked Bhagwan, "Swami, in an organization where we have to interact with people, most often we come across people who are criticizing each other and they're blaming each other. This is very frustrating and this divides people into groups. Since sincere persons become frustrated because of this uncharitable criticism, it looks like character assassination and mudslinging. How are we to take this evil prevalent everywhere?" This is the question that Professor Anil Kumar had made to Bhagwan. And Swami says, it is a sin to criticize others. It is a sin, it is a sign of weakness and inferiority complex. In fact, this is what generally happens, isn't it? If someone is successful, you will find someone else not being able to accept that and someone feeling uncomfortable about the achievements of one person. And so, since you have not achieved and you cannot feel happy for the other person's success, you begin to see how I can in some way bring down the other person. In a way, as Bhagwan is saying, it is a sign of weakness. Instead of you taking inspiration, you are perspiring. It is perspiration for you if someone else succeeds. And you are feeling inferior. But to overcome that feeling, you take to such negative tactics. The Swami is saying it is a sin to criticize others. It is a sign of weakness and inferiority complex. You shouldn't criticize or hate anyone. In fact, no one has any authority to criticize others, Bhagwan says. To tackle this, first of all, one should put a question to oneself. Who is being criticized? Then you don't feel upset any longer. If someone criticizes you, Bhagwan says you should ask who is being criticized. If the criticism applies to your body, you don't need to feel bad because the body is temporary. The body is ephemeral. If somebody says something about you, don't identify yourself too much with your body. You should be indifferent to your own body, because the body always lands us into different problems and difficulties. Swami says, in fact, the other person is doing service to you by criticizing you. By criticizing your body, he is doing you a favor. You should be thankful, Swami says. And if the criticism is to the Atma, then you know that it is not possible, because the same Atma or the soul is present in the critic also. Atma is the same in all. Then who is the critic and who is criticized? It all amounts to the criticism of one's own self. So basically, the person who is criticizing is criticizing his own self, because it is the same self that is present in everyone. Now, if someone criticizes you and if you don't acknowledge that, you don't recognize that, then Swami says, you think of it does not apply to you, because if it is to the body, then you are not the body. And if it is to the mind, then mind does not criticize anyone. The same mind is there in everyone. So ultimately, it is criticism of one's own self, Swami says. Ego and jealousy are the root causes that provoke a person to criticize others. Why it happens? Ego and jealousy, that we know, isn't it? Somebody is not able to see another person succeed, or someone has this feeling of I and mine very deeply. I am this, I am that, I did this, or I was able to achieve this, or I am this. Because of these feelings, you are not able to forget about the false identifications that you have made to yourself. We forget how we are, what we are, why we are what we are. So Swami says, ego and jealousy are the root causes that provoke a person to criticize others. And then when Bhagwan says, you want to know how you should react to criticism against you, Swami gives a small example. Suppose you receive a registered letter. Now, if you don't want to accept it, then you can refuse to take delivery. Then what will happen? The registered letter will go back to the sender. Similarly, criticism against you is a registered letter. Don't acknowledge and receive it. If you refuse it, then the same registered letter of criticism will go back to the sender. It'll go back to the critic himself. So if anyone speaks loudly or belligerently against you in public, it's all lost in the air. If anybody accuses you secretly, it goes to the accuser himself. Lord Buddha also was asked this question once, and this is what Buddha said. If someone gives you a pen, now if you don't stretch your hand and take the pen, what will happen? The pen will remain in that other person's hand, or the pen will just fall on the ground. So that is what happens if you don't receive the negative comments from the other person. It should not affect you. Bhagwan goes on to say, what I feel is that one has to be judged by one's merits and not by one's faults. We are not here to look at other person's faults. I ask you repeatedly to seek out your own faults. You see your own faults and look at the other person's merits. If you inquire deeply, you will notice that personal criticism is nothing but the reflection of the inner being. Swami says, if you are criticizing, it only shows there is something in you that is not proper. You spot the bad in the outside world because of the bad in you, Swami says. There is nothing that you can find outside yourself. If you are seeing something not proper outside or in someone else, that is because there is something not proper in you, Swami says. Swami gives this beautiful example of how when Duryodhana was asked to go in search of a good man, please find one person who is very good in your kingdom. And Duryodhana searches and comes back and says that I cannot find anyone. I think I am the person who is really good. I can't see anyone better than me in the kingdom. And when Dharmaja, Yudhishthira, was asked to go around and find a bad person, he returned saying that I can't see anyone who's really bad. Everyone is good. They have such good thoughts and intentions and acts. He says there is no one who is bad other than himself. The reason they responded in this manner is that whatever we see is basically reflection of the inner being, Swami says. As is your vision, so appears the creation. As is the color of the glasses you wear, so is the color of the world you see. Swami says, if you are aware of this truth, you will never criticize anybody. Sarva deva namaskaram keshavam pratigacchati. Whoever you respect and revere, it amounts to reverence unto God, because God is in everyone. If you respect anyone, it means you respect God. Sarva jiva tiraskaram keshavam pratigacchati. Whomever you hate, it amounts to hatred of the divine himself. Swami says, if you deeply look into the eyes of the man standing in front of you, you will see your own reflection in the other person's eye. So that other person is not a separate person, he's your own reflection. This ultimate spiritual truth is there is only one without the second. When you point out your forefinger at the mistake of another man, there are three fingers of yours which are turned towards you, reminding you of your own mistakes. So once you understand this, Swami is saying, you will not criticize anybody or blame anybody. God gives and forgives. Swami says, past is past and it is beyond recovery. Therefore, we should be always careful of the present, because the present creates the future. So, here one of the obstructions, Swami says, is cynical criticism. And here Bhagwan in Satyopanishad has mentioned why we criticize. It is ego and jealousy which is at the root of criticism. How to deal with it? Also Bhagwan has said, and this quality of mindlessly looking at someone else's faults or mistakes is an obstruction to recognizing the aspect of Satchit Ananda asti bhasti priyam that is there immanent in every aspect of creation. We have seen so many stories, so many instances where people have criticized God, isn't it? Any number of occasions, it has happened with Bhagwan's own life. Right from his childhood, there were people in and around Puttaparthi who could not stomach the feeling that a small lad of this village has become so popular and there are rich people coming, there are ministers coming, there are big officers coming, there are people from the cities coming to see him. They were just not able to accept and be comfortable with the feeling that someone is becoming so popular. And that's the reason why in those days they kept criticizing, and there is that landmark letter that Bhagwan wrote to his brother in the year 1947 where Swami says that it is the fruit-bearing trees that always receive the stones. You don't worry. When his brother was very concerned, Swami says, don't worry. Only the tree that has fruits will be stoned because people want the fruits. People not able to accept someone else's growth. And it has happened all the while in Bhagwan's life. When he started the hospital, someone says, no, this is not going to happen, you know. How can a hospital, free hospital run? Even when Bhagwan had sent his students to All India Institute of Medical Sciences for training, people there were laughing at them. He says, what a impractical idea is this, that you want to do free surgeries and like one day, 2 day, one or two operations, we can understand. Like, you want to do super speciality, high care, you want to give it absolutely free? It's not possible. Tertiary care and no money charged. You want to give water to 700 villages, 1,000 villages, and you don't want to charge anything to anyone? You want to offer PhD programs, still don't want to charge. You're offering professional courses, M.Techs and MBAs, and still 1 year, 2 year for a few students who don't have money or who need help is understandable. But you want to do it for everyone? Every time Bhagwan started something, there are always so many people who said that this is not going to work out. And these are people who will discover wrong meanings in the teachings of the Guru, Swami says. And it has happened all the time. Why it has happened? Because of ego and because of jealousy, as Swami says. And there are so many messages of Bhagwan, there are so many teachings of Bhagwan, which people don't apply to understand and interpret in the right manner. And that is the reason why they find wrong meanings in the teachings of the Guru, because of this cynical attitude. So someone will say, Swami, you are asking us to do this, you are asking us to follow this, you are asking us to follow ceiling on desires, you are asking us to do this sadhana, you are asking us to give up meat, give up drinking, give up smoking, you are asking us to do suprabhatam, you are asking us to do this seva. But in spite of all this, I really don't know how and where my life is going. It's so confusing. It is so disheartening. I don't know if I'm going in the right direction. I'm doing so many things. I don't know if whatever you're saying has any meaning, because I have done all this and many things I continue to do, but my life is not really the way I want it to be. and you slowly doubt and you slowly become critical of the teachings of the Guru. Swami says, you know the mridangam, the South Indian musical instrument, the mridangam, which is like a drum, it has to be beaten on both the sides. You have to play it on both the sides. Swami says, your life is like a rat caught in that mridangam. Imagine a rat inside that mridangam. If the mridangam is beaten on one side, the rat will run to the other side. And similarly, if it is beaten on the other side, it will run to this side. Swami says, what you are doing with your life also is like this. When you are fed up with the world, you think of God. When God tests you, you again drift towards the world. So your movement between the world and the God is like this rat. That is the reason why, in spite of doing everything, you feel so frustrated. And then you say, attribute wrong meanings to the teachings, you attribute wrong meanings to what the Guru has said, what Bhagwan has said. And Swami gives a very beautiful example. There are two students who competed with each other in a tournament. And what was this tournament? It was a tournament of eating bananas. So one student wanted to eat the outer skin of every fruit first. The tournament was who can eat maximum bananas. So one student thought, I will eat the outer skin of every banana first, because after that I can eat the soft pulp very easily. The other student decided, no, I will eat the soft part first and then the skin. And so they started their tournament. So the first student, having eaten the outer skin of every fruit, he had eaten so many outer skins that, you know, his belly became full and he could not eat any sweet pulp later. And this fellow was defeated. He started suffering from stomachache and indigestion. The second student, he ate a belly full of the pulp of every fruit. But because he ate too much of the pulp, the actual banana fruit, the soft part of the fruit, he could not eat the skin of the fruits. So because of that, he also lost in the competition. But the only difference is, the first person had stomachache and indigestion and all that, but the second person was healthy. And Swami says, this is the case with those people who are after worldly desires and sensual pleasures. These people will have to end their lives in misery, finding no cure for bhavaroga, the ailment of worldly attachment. It is like the condition of the first student who ate only the outer skin of the banana. So if you eat only the outer skin of the banana, you end up getting stomachache and indigestion. That is what happens with people who are constantly only thinking about their pleasures and desires. And those who think of God are like the second student who ate the soft pulp. So they will grow stronger. They will grow stronger in divine life because you have eaten the nourishing part of the banana. Life should start from the point of view of Dasoham, Swami says. You should begin from that stage of, I am your servant, O Lord, I am your servant, I am your servant. And fill its middle with the relentless inquiry, who am I? Should begin with Dasoham and then constantly spend time with this inquiry of who am I. And you should end with that realization, that Soham, Dasoham to Soham. Soham means I am God. Whole journey of life should be Dasoham to Soham. It is very important to realize that the peace and happiness that everyone seeks is not there in the outside world. Bhagwan says, you go to a hotel and the person comes there and he asks, what shall I serve you? The waiter and you say, no, I want idli and sambar. And then the waiter is taken by surprise because he says, have you not seen the board before coming here? This is a non-vegetarian hotel. Swami says, how can you expect pulao and biryani and chicken if you go to a Udupi Brahmin hotel, which is a vegetarian hotel? Similarly, there is a board outside this world which says anityam asukham lokam. This world is temporary and full of misery. Anityam asukham. Asukham means no sukha, full of misery. So if you want peace and happiness in this world, there is only one way, and that is what is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. Mam bhajasva. What Lord Krishna says, think of me or worship me or be immersed in me or surrender to me. Only through this you can get peace and happiness. Through the world you cannot. So why people get into this confusion and says, okay, in spite of all this, I am not able to know if my life is proceeding in the right direction, what is happening? It's because Swami says, you're like this rat, because one day you say, Swami, I'm yours and you take care of me, and the other day you get entangled in the world and you think, no, I have done this, and I was the one who had started this. So many, we get into these different shifts of our understanding. So our devotion, our surrender keeps fluctuating. That is the reason why, in spite of spending so many years, we have not progressed. Swami is telling you will not get peace and happiness in the world. Mam bhajasa, only peace and happiness can be got only by surrendering to Him. And that has to be a continuous one. People get confused. Which teaching of Bhagavan to follow? One Swami says, follow the master, face the devil, fight to the end, finish the game. Swami says, duty, devotion, discipline, the 5 D's, and there is 3 P's, purity, patience, perseverance. And then Swami says, no, all you need is follow the conscience, don't follow the body, don't follow the mind, follow the conscience. So, which one to follow? And because you can't spend little time understanding what Bhagavan has said, then you'll say, I can't understand, you know, what Swami is telling. It's all so confusing. Bhagavan says, there are only 3 main principles. If you follow that, everything else is done. You will undoubtedly progress in all the fields of activity, whether it's individual activity or collective activity. And the first principle is Daiva Priti, love of God. Second principle, Papa Bhiti, fear of sin. And the third, Sanghaniti, morality in society. Swami says, unless you love God immensely, you cannot fear sin. Once there is fear of sin, morality automatically gets established in society, isn't it? All these 3 principles are interdependent and interrelated. Swami would often tell the students, before you do anything, put this question to yourself. Will Swami approve of this action? Is this going to please Swami? Your intense love for Swami will ensure that you don't do anything wrong. And that is how love for God leads to fear of sin. We say, no, this is a he's a God-fearing person. Or he's a God-loving person. A God-loving person will ensure that he's a sin-fearing person. Because you all the time feel that He is there watching. We commit mistakes because we somehow many times don't feel or don't live with that awareness that He is watching. If you constantly live with that feeling that He is constantly looking, He is constantly there, which is the truth, is as all pervasive as air and the 5 elements, then we will not commit any sin. Here Swami is saying, your love for God will ensure that you have fear for sin. you will find this turbulent and raging waves in the sea, you know, which are dashing against boulders. But the boulders are steady, unshaken. That is how one's faith should be, Swami says. Steady, strong, unshakable, unwavering, irrespective of losses, failures, defeats, troubles, difficulties, problems. That is how one should be steady. Even if someone says, no, see, you are going through all of this, you know, how can you have been worshipping Sai Baba for so long, but how is it that you had this failure, or how is it that you had this trouble? I think he is not God, you know. I think this is a bad thing that you're doing. It is bringing you all bad luck. Someone else will say, you have spent so much time thinking about God and you keep telling Sai Baba is God. And I don't know. You just think about yourself. This whole God business has got you into more problems. Actually, there is no God. And there will be all kinds of people who will tell you these things. And then you will start attributing things, everything that has happened negative in your life to God, to Swami. Swami says, if someone says there is no God, do you know what reply you should give? You should say, okay, there is no God for you. You don't have your God, but you have no right to deny my God. In fact, Swami says there is a Panchakshari, a five-lettered mantra that you should never forget. Swami says, it is Devudu Unnadu. That is, in Telugu, Devudu Unnadu. Devudu Unnadu. Which means five-lettered, Devudu Unnadu, five letters, means God exists. And Swami says, you should never doubt this. And there is a Astakshari, Swami says. There is an eight-lettered Sanskrit mantra. Sam sa yatma vinashyati. Sam sa yatma vinashyati. Eight. It means doubt is death. Sam sa yatma vinashyati. Should never doubt God. As Bhagwan used to say, God is nowhere. When people say God is nowhere, all you have to do is just move that W. Separate it from nowhere. Then it becomes God is now here. Most unfortunately, man commits sins. But man is not prepared to face their consequences. Man only wants the result of good actions. But he does actions which lead to bad consequences, but you want only the result of good actions. Swami says, how can you always sow a neem seed and expect to get mango fruits out of that tree? It is so foolish to expect such results. How can you expect one kind of result from an altogether different and opposite kind of action? Everything comes back to you as reflection, reaction, resound. You cannot escape it, Swami says. Once we realize this, then we will not commit any sins. You will not involve yourself in any harmful deeds. So Bhagwan says, okay, there are so many teachings. People say, I'm getting confused. Bhagwan says, okay, there's nothing to get confused. All you have to do is just remember these three. Love God, fear sin. With this, there will be morality in society. So for the people who criticize about being confused about the teachings of Bhagwan, this is a simple formula. And then there are other people, youngsters, who again misunderstand the teachings of Bhagwan. Swami says the end of culture is perfection, end of knowledge is love, end of education is character, end of wisdom is freedom. And people here When we say end of knowledge is love, people many times have this wrong understanding of love. Whenever Bhagwan talks about love, he does not talk about love in the way it is commonly understood in the movies and in the romantic novels. That is not the end of knowledge. True love, as Swami says, is love without attachment. It is spiritual love, and that love is only towards God. All other forms of love, they have all different names to it. Vatsalyam, Anuragam. And they all have a lot of selfishness in them. And they have impurities in them. So, to just hear a statement from Bhagwan but not apply ourselves to understand what it truly means will only lead to wrong understanding. And that is because of our limited knowledge. Without spending enough time to assimilate what Bhagwan has said. Similarly, when Swami says end of wisdom is freedom. So some youth will say, see, Swami talks about freedom, end of wisdom is freedom, and we want our freedom, we should be independent, we should be able to act in the way we choose. Why are you asking me to do this? I want my freedom. And Swami says, people don't understand what is freedom. You use the terms like swechha and swatantra, swatantra. We use these terms indiscriminately without knowing their correct meaning. Swami says, if freedom means behaving as we like without any norms, just like how birds and bees, they do whatever they want, then how are we different from animals and birds? They move about without any restrictions. They have no reason, they have no season. Swami says, if youngsters want to be like that, then insects, birds and animals without attending any universities and getting degrees are able to manage to secure food and shelter and live freely as ordained by nature. They're living that basic existence. Why has God endowed on man higher faculties? If you want to live like animals. In fact, Bhagwan, many times you would say animals are better than you because they have some reason and season. Man only has forgotten reason and season. Bhagwan says, what is swechha? What is freedom? In the Sanskrit word swechha, if one analyzes properly, it is swa plus cha. Swa means yourself. And what is that swa? Swa means the atma. It is not your ego. It is not your I and my feeling. It is Atma. It is the spirit. So, Swa means Atma plus Ichha. It means the power of the Atma. It relates to the Atma. When we say, I have independence, Swatantra, here again, Swami says, Swatantra, independence does not mean your reckless, careless, irresponsible behavior to do whatever you want to do. It is like, I will eat, drink and roam around the way I want. Swami says, then cats and rats also do the same thing. Swatantra, Swami says, is not that kind of an independence. Every independence has a limit. Your independence should not come in the way of the independence of others. You have independence up to the point that it does not affect the independence of others. Suppose there is a person walking on the road and he feels, no, when as I walk, I will take a walking stick or I'll take a big stick and I will keep swinging it freely. And then someone might come and say, why are you swinging your stick like this? You'll hurt someone. But this person says, no, I will do what I want because I have my independence. This is my stick and my energy and what is your problem? I will move it the way I want. Can someone behave like this? But the other person then will say, your independence to swing your walking stick ends where my nose begins to appear, because while swinging your walking stick, I'm afraid you'll hit my nose. That is a limitation of your independence. True Swarajya, Swami says, independence is self. What is that self-independence? That is independent of foreign rule. People think Swarajya is independent of foreign rule. You break the chains of slavery under the yoke of the rulers and declare independence. That is political independence. That is not enough, Swami says. Spiritually also you should be independent. And how can you be spiritually independent? Only when you are not controlled by outside forces. You are not controlled by the senses, who are always driven outside. Once you have conquered your weaknesses and you have checked your evil tendencies, once you are absolutely in control of your feelings, your inclinations, you're not driven by the pulls and pressures of your senses. Once you have conquered desire, lust, greed, anger, hatred, the sense of vengeance, that is what is true independence. So, like this, there are so many concepts which people don't spend time to understand, and then we criticize the master. And this is what Swami says is the obstruction in the present for us in realizing the aspect of Satchitananda, realizing the aspect of how every aspect of creation is pervaded with divinity. It is because of these shortcomings we are not able to understand that. We, because of our cynical attitude, because of our limited understanding, because we don't want to spend time to going to the correct meaning of the teachings of the master. And there are so many such examples. Somebody will say, God is there, omnipresent. Swami says, God is omnipresent. Ishvara sarva bhutanam, sarva bhutantaratma, is there in every atma. Then why we have to go to holy places? Why we have to go to Puttaparthi? Why we have to go to Shirdi? Why should we go in all the places? Anyway, God is there everywhere. Swami is there everywhere. Swami says, this is a foolish question. You are exhibiting your ignorance and your fashionable way of thinking, which more often than not is perverted, Swami says. There is actually no relationship between what is said and what is experienced. Swami says, if you say that God is everywhere, and if it is just an expression, if it is just a vocal expression, if it is just a verbal experience, expression, and you have not experienced it, do you really have that strong faith that God is present everywhere? Have you had that experience of the divinity that He is everywhere? Are you just simply speaking like a parrot, or have you had that intense experience of the all-pervasiveness of God? The way Radha used to feel, the way Prahlada felt. Prahlada said, doesn't matter, you throw me from wherever, everything is Narayana. I mean, Hiranyakashipu, you ask, is Narayana there in that pillar? He says, yeah, very much is there. It is because of that faith of Prahlada that everything is pervaded, that Lord had to come out of that pillar. So, do we really have that experience? Swami says, blood circulates throughout the body of a cow. But can you draw milk from anywhere of the body of the cow? Milk will come only out of the udder, isn't it? You can't squeeze the ear or twist the tail of the cow to get milk. It'd be ridiculous. Same way, Swami says, the all-pervading God can be visualized and experienced in a temple, in a holy pilgrim center. Yes, God is there everywhere, but just like you can get milk out of the udder of the cow, similarly, the all-pervasive God is easily visualized and experienced, you are in an ambience where you can feel that strongly. And that is why you have this spiritually charged places, the temple. You will get milk only out of the udder, you won't get it from the ear. So like this, there are so many concepts which people without understanding criticize the master and his teachings. Someone will say, if God is there in everyone, then why should there be differences? Why we have so much of differences between people? If the same divinity is present in everyone. And Swami so beautifully says that, you know, it's the same current that goes through, but everything, the lights depend on the bulb. If there is a low wattage bulb, then it will give you low light. You can't blame the current for it. You can't blame the power for it. You have to change the bulb. Electricity is one and the same. Bulbs are different in their wattage and voltage, and that this is what determines the intensity of light. Our bodies are like those bulbs. There is that inner current of same divinity. If we are not able to brighten the divinity that is there within us, if we are not glowing in that divinity, then we have to change ourselves. Electricity is the same. That same electricity is there, whether it is Meera, Radha, Prahlada or a saint. It's the same electricity, but they have put better bulbs. Their body has become a better bulb. So we have to make our self into better bulbs, which will glow with the divine lustre more than what it is now. So, Bhagwan in this segment says that we criticize God because we don't understand the teachings and we discover wrong meanings of the teachings, and this what it becomes one major obstacle in us experiencing the aspect of everything around us being truly divine. So I just took a few examples to say how people often sometimes don't get it, and that's when you criticize God. And the moment you criticize God, that actually is self-criticism. Swami says it, you are criticizing yourself, and you are creating an obstruction in recognizing the spiritual truth. So it's so important for us to not get swayed by the limited understandings and the vacillations of the mind when we go through different ups and downs of life, and keep the faith steady, keep the focus steady, then slowly the reality around us will get revealed to us. Yes, everything that we are doing in our spiritual practices, with our bhajan or service, it's very important to think about the purpose, why I'm doing every day, why I'm doing. Even if I've done it for 10 years, 15 years, I think it's very important to constantly ask ourselves, why did I start and what is the whole motive of doing this? I think that will help us to keep our focus on our journey, which starts with, Swami says, Dasoham, I'm the servant, to recognizing I am that Soham. That journey of Dasoham to Soham is so important. And for that, it is imperative for us to keep our focus right all the time. So we'll continue this in the coming episode. There are two more obstructions, Swami says, which are there in the present. And then there are obstructions in the future, and those are also very interesting ones. They are very subtle, but very significant, and we will take them up in the coming sessions of Vahini Satsang. As always, if you have any queries, please do send your emails to listener@ssmediacenter.org. You can also send your comments on our WhatsApp number 9393258258. Whatever I have shared is my little understanding of what Bhagwan has given us in Sandhya Nivarani. So if there is anything you would want to add or want to correct or you want to supplement, compliment, please feel free. We are all in the journey and we are all learning. And with time, by Bhagwan's grace, we understand a little more. And as we practice, then we experience a little more. And then our understanding becomes even better. And that's how we grow. With gratitude and love, I offer Bhagwan this little effort and pray that we have the right mindset to assimilate his teachings and make them part of our daily life. Thank you so much. Sairam.